Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Lieutenant Governor John Husted will join us to talk about the groundbreaking for a new manufacturing and robotics facility and engineering and robotics lab at Millstream Career Center, and the nearly $3.5 million state grant that's making it possible. Also this morning in our Salute to Service, the story of how one soldier started a movement across the entire U.S. Army to step up for those in need of bone marrow donors. In our high school football preview, Leipzig head coach Joe Kirkendall discusses the Vikings' regional semifinal versus Delphus St. John's. And we have recipes for your Thanksgiving gathering from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, November 15th, 2024. Hey, this is kind of cool. Toledo has carved out a spot for itself on the list of the best cities to go for Thanksgiving. So this is a new Wallet Hub survey, and I love Wallet Hub surveys. It's not really a survey. It's more an analysis and a ranking list of the best cities for this, that, and the other thing. They do this from time to time, best cities, states, for this, that, and the other thing. And this is the list of the best cities to go to for Thanksgiving. They looked at 18 key metrics from the 100 largest U.S. cities. And that's why we mentioned Toledo, because it would be among the 100 largest U.S. cities. So the one closest to us that would be on the list. And this is what I love about Wallet Hub's stuff. Is it's pretty comprehensive. 18 different metrics. They looked at hotel rates, flight delay statistics, weather, average cost of a Thanksgiving dinner, etc., etc., etc. 18 different metrics at all. And they came up with a list of the best cities to go to for Thanksgiving. San Diego comes in at number one, followed by Atlanta and San Francisco. Cincinnati is actually the top-ranked Ohio city on the list at number 13. Columbus is 50th. Toledo ranks 52nd. So, right about in the middle of the top 100. Cleveland is number 54. So, most of the Ohio cities are kind of stacked in the middle there. But Cincinnati stands out near the top of the list at number 13. Stockton, California, by the way, at the very bottom of the list. Ain't nobody wants to go to Stockton for Thanksgiving. But Toledo outshines nearly every other city in one very important metric, affordability. Toledo tied with Laredo, Texas, as the place with the lowest cost of Thanksgiving dinner. So kind of interesting. And kudos to Toledo for doing so well on that list. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started. This, I thought, was a bit of an eyebrow raiser. You know that Cedar Fair, the parent company behind Cedar Point, merged with Six Flags Amusement Parks earlier this year. And so now all of the Six Flags and Cedar Fair parks are under one umbrella. And also, you know, one of the narratives at Cedar Point from this past year was the supposed debut of a reimagined Top Thrill Dragster. It had been closed for more than a year. They reimagined it, reopened it this year, and almost immediately closed it again because of, I guess there were some concerns with the way they redid the ride, and it was closed for most of the year. Supposedly, they're going to get it fixed. It'll be reopened next year. We'll see. In the meantime, they're putting in a new coaster at Cedar Point as well. But anyway, because of all of that that was in the news here locally, if you're an amusement park aficionado or roller coaster fan, you probably have been following this story. So I saw this on the newswire, Kingda Ka, the kind of sister coaster to Top Thrill Dragster at Six Flags Great Adventure in Jackson, New Jersey, is going to be removed. So again, Six Flags and Cedar Fair, one company now, And King Dakka is kind of the same coaster as Top Thrill Dragster. It's a little different, but basically the big attraction, the big, you know, 400-foot tall hill was the same. It is identical to Top Thrill. And King Dakka actually a little taller than Top Thrill at 460 foot. In fact, it is the world's tallest roller coaster. But now the park has announced yesterday, this word came out, that it plans to take down the 460 foot tall Thrill Ride, which was also once the world's fastest coaster at 128 miles an hour. Exactly what will replace it will not be announced until next summer. The story goes on to say King Dakka featured a sharp 418-foot drop and offered riders views of both New York City and Philadelphia skylines. And you're up there at the top for just a brief moment to see the skylines of both New York and Philly. Provided more than 12 million rides since it opened in 2005. And at the time, Six Flags and Cedar Fair were competing companies. Now they're the same. It's kind of interesting that they are taking down the King Dakka coaster and Top Thrill 2, the renamed, reimagined Top Thrill 2, was idle for most of this year. So I'm not saying that, you know, a dismantling of that ride is in the future, but they've had so many problems with it. Even after they tried to resurrect it, they still had problems with it. Who knows? It's just kind of interesting there. If you follow such things, I thought that was an interesting story. Here is another eyebrow raiser on the Newswire this morning. You know how more and more people are partaking of the wacky weed these days, now that recreational marijuana is legal in the state of Ohio. But before you take your next toke, make note of this. Cannabis use could be linked to increased rates of cancers and birth defects. This is a new study out of Australia, which found that cannabis exposure was associated with noticeable increases in various types of cancers, including pancreatic, liver, thyroid, breast, and testicular cancers. Also, links to birth defects like missing limbs and heart problems were also uncovered in this research study, with cannabis users seeming to be passing mutated DNA to children in the womb. Researchers point to the increased potency of cannabis products that are available these days. So, and of course, it's much more prevalent. Use is much more prevalent as it becomes mainstreamed. Let's see. And a couple of other items among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This was a really great story that I saw yesterday on the Newswire. Are you familiar with the satirical news outlet, The Onion? I follow The Onion on Facebook because some of their stories are great for a laugh. Is satire of just about everything. They poke fun at just about everything at The Onion. Well, now they have acquired InfoWars, the Alex Jones conspiratorial news platform. And I use the word news very loosely in describing InfoWars as a news platform. For that matter, The Onion is kind of loosely defined as a news platform. So now The Onion apparently won an auction for InfoWars and the company Free Speech Systems, founded by Alex Jones, in a bankruptcy court proceeding earlier this week. You recall that Alex Jones was ordered to pay almost $1.5 billion to the families of victims of the Sandy Hook school shooting for repeatedly claiming that the whole thing was a hoax. A judge allowed Mr. Jones to liquidate his assets in order to pay the families, and The Onion bought InfoWars. When I first saw that, I thought it was a joke by The Onion, but it turns out it was true. They reportedly plan to shut down InfoWars and recreate the platform to feature humor writers and humor-based content creators. So, if you again, are familiar with the satirical nature of The Onion, go and read their press release on their purchase of InfoWars. It is absolutely hilarious. So. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, here's another year-end list. This is the time of the year when just about anybody and everybody compiles their year-end list of this, that, and the other thing. And Uber Eats is out with their annual cravings report of the craziest orders that diners have placed throughout the course of the year. The craziest Uber Eats delivery food orders that people have placed during the past year in their cravings report. Year after year, it has become increasingly clear that consumers love to take advantage of our customization features to ensure that every order satisfies their cravings. This according to senior data scientist Sarah Harrell at Uber Eats. Odd combinations. Some of the oddest combinations actually ordered by people on Uber Eats included fajitas and French onion soup. Okay. Fried fish sticks and green tea. and orange creamsicles. Love orange creamsicles. I haven't had one in a long time. Maybe I should order Uber Eats, but orange creamsicles and tajin, the Mexican spicy dish. That one really jumped out at me. That is an interesting combination. Most people, Uber Eats says, stuck to classic combos like chicken tenders and fries or ramen with a soft-boiled egg, something like that. In terms of spice, one customer wrote this request in all caps, one of the actual requests from a customer on Uber Eats this year. Hottest level, please. I know it says 5 stars, but I want even more. Give me the hottest level in all caps with like multiple exclamation points. Somebody craving their spice. I don't know. Just kind of interesting. Some of the crazy combinations that people order on Uber Eats, satisfying those cravings. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News. I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly cloudy today. A high around 50. Mostly cloudy tonight. A low in the middle 40s. The Findlay Police Department has released the body cam footage of the fatal officer-involved shooting that occurred on October 28th.
Throw the gun now!
Affirmative, we have a suspect who's been shot. You take McManus north of the dead end, that's where we're at.
That was a short part of the body cam footage. You can see the full footage in this story on our website. At a news conference at the Findlay Municipal Building, Police Chief James Mathias said the officer acted appropriately when he returned fire after being fired upon by the juvenile suspect. Two officers are on leave as the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation continues its investigation. A potential change under the incoming presidential administration could affect immigrants living in Ohio. Republican Senator-elect Bernie Moreno says the plan is to end temporary protected status, which was granted to, among others, thousands of Haitian people living in Springfield, Ohio.
In early October, Trump said he would revoke temporary protected status for Haitian immigrants in Springfield and deport them. Senator-elect Bernie Moreno says the administration will not revoke TPS immediately, but will not extend it past February of 2026 when it expires for Haiti. The American Immigration Council says the Secretary of Homeland Security has the authority to grant temporary protected status, not Congress. The designation is made for people living in countries dealing with crises, including war, natural disasters, and other extraordinary conditions.
ONAN's Doug Petcash reporting. Findlay High School says it's proud to announce another year of Turkeys for Trojans, a collaborative community effort that provides a warm Thanksgiving meal for the families of students. The high school says with the generous help of many donors, staff, and community members, they've been able to provide nearly 1,000 meals for families since 2018. If you want to help out, you can deliver cash or a check to the Findlay High School main office. Donations are accepted until November 22nd, and as an added bonus this year, one principal will be wearing a turkey costume all day on November 22nd. Get more details about how you can help out in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So now our cover story this morning. Lieutenant Governor John Husted was in town yesterday for the groundbreaking on a new manufacturing and robotics facility and engineering and robotics lab at Millstream Career Center. He joins us this morning to talk about that really impressive addition to the Millstream campus and the nearly $3.5 million state grant that is making it possible. Lieutenant Governor Husted, thanks very much for taking the time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, great to be with you. It was a fun day at Millstream. They're doing some great things there.
So talk a little bit about this facility and the lab. Again, this is pretty involved, is manufacturing and robotics facility and engineering and robotics lab. Talk a little bit about what this is.
So it will serve an additional 120 students a year. It's a $3.4 million grant from the state of Ohio. We did this for career centers all across the state because we need to improve career technical education. We want every student to have access to it. The employers in the area, everything from Whirlpool to Goodyear to Grobe, all of them need young talent. They need more talent because of their growth in the workforce and the integration of technology into the workplace. And so this expansion is going to open up opportunities in robotics for automated technicians, also in manufacturing, particularly in the technical service and welding area. And this new facility will be state of the art. And think about this: what it means is that more students in the Findlay area are going to graduate career ready, ready to go right to work in jobs that pay very well, and they don't need the cost of going to pay for a college education or running up debt, because they'll get that education in high school, and then these employers will continue to upgrade their technical skills over time. So this new lab and manufacturing industrial center at Millstream is going to change the future for 120 students every year.
That is really the key for this, the state-of-the-art nature, again, very heavily into the robotics age and the, you know, another one of those STEM careers. And you were touching on this just a moment ago. I want you to expand on the importance of that for Ohio's future economy.
Yeah, look, we are trying to do Made in America again, right? Well, you can't do Made in America without Made in Ohio, because we literally make all of the supply chain for the auto industry, the aircraft industry, the food industry, you name it. We're there. We're the backbone to this. But to do that, we've got to compete on productivity, because we don't want to have low paying jobs and compete on low labor costs like they do in other parts of the world. We want people to earn more, right?
Yeah.
If we want them to earn more, then they have to produce more. And the way that you do that is to give them skills to work with automated processes so that our productivity in America can be very high. That means these companies can compete at delivering quality products at affordable prices and pay people the wages that they need to live a good quality of life. That's how it all fits together. And in Millstream and the Findlay area really took a step forward with this announcement yesterday.
To the extent that this is so critical for the future of Ohio and the future of the state's economy, I would cite a Department of Development report that was out just earlier this month, which projects that Ohio's population will be declining over the next 20, 30 years. And how important is this? And, you know, that projection is what it is based on current numbers and current trends. How important are initiatives like this to sort of reverse that trajectory?
Well, you know, those trajectories are based on static analysis. And so let's face it, there are more people between 55 and 64 than there are between 15 and 24. Why?
Right.
Because people had fewer children. And so if you're just basing it on the people that live here and one generation was having four children, the next generation is having two children,
sure.
Yeah, your population will decline.
But it's so also... Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish that thought.
No, but there's two things. Is that one, that means if the population truly does decline, then we're going to have to produce things with fewer people, which means you're going to need more skills and automation to be able to do it. However, I also don't believe that those projections are actually accurate, because if you grow the economy and you create jobs, you'll have more people stay, but you'll also have more people move here. Maybe your cousin who moved away will move back to Findlay because there's a great job, and then have a family there. And those are the kinds of things. When you grow the economy, you can grow the population to fill the jobs that you have. And that's what the strategy is.
And produce
the talent, grow the economy, and we'll get there.
Yeah, that is actually kind of where I was going with that, because it's been for many years we've talked on and off about the concern over the brain drain in Ohio and making sure that doesn't happen in the Buckeye State. This really is part of that effort, right?
Well, it is, because think about this. If you're graduating high school and you already have the technical skills you need to go to work,
mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to go away somewhere to get an education. You received it right there, and you can go to work right there in your own home community. And think how much easier it is. It's like, hey, I can live at home. I can go to work. I can save a little money before I fly the nest. And then I've saved enough that I can buy a house locally, or I can do those things and get a jump start on life to put roots down where I grew up. And that's why these things matter. Businesses want to hire students earlier than ever because we have more jobs than we have people right now. And so if they can get the right kind of skills in high school, then they'll hire them right there. And oh, by the way, it's not like it's college or career tech. You can earn college credit with this as well, and then go to work and then just gradually build that academic portfolio while you're earning at the same time.
As we mentioned, this new addition that broke ground yesterday at Millstream, made possible by a $3.4 million grant from the Ohio Career Technical Education Equipment Grant Program. Talk a little bit more about this program. This is now in its second round of funding here.
Yeah, well, Governor DeWine and I have been big advocates for career tech, and we got the legislature to appropriate $300 million for career tech, exclusively for career tech. Why did we need it? Because many of these career tech facilities are full. I remember when people said, hey, we need more vocational education. Well, we do. We have it. And now a lot of these schools' programs are full. And so the career tech grants are for expanding the facilities like we're doing at Millstream, but also helping to buy the very expensive machinery and equipment, like robots and things like that, like automated machinery that you can train the students on, so they're being trained on the very same things that they'll need out in the private sector. And this $300 million that we're spending investing for career tech across the state of Ohio are going to open up 15,000 new slots for students to go get a career tech education. Think about that. 15,000 more students every year leaving high school career ready, ready to go to work. I was at one career tech school recently where 93% of the graduating class had job offers, and they had earned $3.1 million before they even left high school with the part-time work and earn programs that we have at our career tech schools. So career tech is on fire in the state of Ohio. And we just got to keep pace by helping make sure we have the facilities and the equipment to make it happen.
A big investment in Ohio's future workforce and indeed, as we were saying, the future economy of the Buckeye State. Again, Lieutenant Governor John Husted with us this morning to talk about the groundbreaking of the new manufacturing and robotics facility and engineering and robotics lab at Millstream Career Center. Before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about this. Obviously, the state of Ohio has a Senate seat that is about to come open as J.D. Vance is about to be sworn in as vice president. Your name has been floated as a possible replacement in the U.S. Senate for the J.D. Vance seat. Is it something that you would be interested in?
Well, it's very nice that people are talking about me as a candidate for governor, as a possible U.S. senator. But that's Governor DeWine's decision. And as I've always said that I was going to do, I will now announce what my future plans are next year. But it's nice to be considered, but that's not my plan right now.
We will leave it there. Again, Lieutenant Governor John Husted, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Well, you know, when we talk about all of the great things that the members of the military do to protect and defend Americans, this is maybe not the first thing that comes to mind, but November is Bone Marrow Awareness Month. It is often the difference between life and death for those fighting diseases like leukemia and lymphoma. And so U.S. Army soldiers are stepping up through Operation Ring the Bell, and Sergeant Christian Sutton is the founder of this movement. Sergeant Sutton, first of all, thanks for joining us. Talk a little bit about what Operation Ring the Bell is and how this got started.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Operation Ring the Bell is a hobby I had about 2 years ago that has kind of exploded into what was effectively an army-wide campaign to drastically increase the amount of bone marrow donors registered each year in the U.S. through the Army. Army soldiers registering, Army soldiers donating, taking what was previously for the last 30 years just a volunteer thing people did, which was host bone marrow registry drives to get soldiers to then volunteer to register, to then making it a normal, routine, boring part of something the Army does, and each soldier gets as they get briefed and they get offered the opportunity to volunteer to register. And it all started 2 years ago. I went to a punk rock concert when I had some time off work. I hate punk rock, but, you know, I had to find something to do.
Okay.
I didn't pay attention to the show at all, to be honest. What caught my attention was a table in the back that was Punk Rock Saves Lives. It was a table that was registering people as bone marrow donors 10 feet away from a mosh pit. That really stuck out to me.
So prior to that, was this something that you had thought of or had thought much about?
Not so much as far as me actually taking action and getting involved. Yeah. My mother died of Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was 4. But even when I saw that table and I liked the idea, I was like, oh, wow, this could work. This I feel like this effort right next to a mosh pit, I feel like this somehow translates to the Army. even when I started doing these drives, I got connected to Sleep to Life and started hosting drives around Fort Bliss in my spare time. I didn't really make that connection until later. I learned about this big gap and saw that I figured I was just doing my part. On a small scale.
And as you mentioned, I mean, your experience, you know why bone marrow donation and registration is so important.
Absolutely. And just to preface, for the biggest issue people have or people don't know, how do you think they take out bone marrow if you were going
to
donate?
To be perfectly honest, I really don't know.
So a lot of people think it's a spine tap or it's painful, they're drilling into your bones or, you know. Yeah. Sucking the bone out of your body and taking it away. It's not that. You donate through plasma. It's just like donating plasma for, you know, some extra scratch. It's the same process. They take bone marrow stem cells out of your bloodstream and they use that to get what they would have gotten before just straight from your bones. The only time anyone donates direct from the bones is in the case of a high-risk infant. And in that case, take the 3 days of sore leg. So let's say you get cancer and you go through chemotherapy or you have sickle cell or some condition, but specifically let's just say cancer chemotherapy, and you have to go through so much chemo that it damages your bone marrow's ability to reproduce itself. You don't have an immune system. Your body also can't restart that production of bone marrow unless it gets a little help from a small dose from somebody else, some healthy bone marrow, like jump-starting your car, just a little bit of juice.
Yeah.
It's not like blood. You can't just go to someone with the same blood type as you and take their bone marrow. It's basically what makes up your immune system. It's very specific. So you need to find someone who's also has very specific bone marrow that's so close to yours genetically, so close to your DNA, your ethnicity, everything, that your body can take it, not recognize it as foreign, and then use that to boost up your entire like bone marrow structure.
And therein lies the complication or the difficulty here, because it requires such a specific match. And yet I think I saw the statistic that only about 7% of the U.S. population is listed in the National Bone Marrow Registry. So what response have you seen from the Army and from your fellow soldiers who are involved in this Operation Ring the Bell that you got started here?
Well, like anything, initially confused. You're not going to come by and say, hey, you want to register as a bone marrow donor?
Yeah.
And people aren't going to look at you crazy because it's such a left field idea.
Mm-hmm.
When I do briefs with soldiers, that big question of how do you think you donate bone marrow is always met with, oh, God, oh, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But we give out that information. Once people are educated and they know more and they kind of correct their own cultural misconceptions about it, we've seen a huge response from soldiers. We've registered, the Army registers about an average of 800 people a year. We, which is me and a bunch of other junior soldiers and volunteer soldiers, have registered 15,000 in 2 years.
Wow.
We've now, we get such a huge support from soldiers to get those kind of numbers. And we've been pushing this and being so consistent and loud. We've been able to get the support of Army leaders across the Army. Generally, in the Army, I don't know if you know, it's not good. It's not a good idea if your brigade commander knows your name. It's often not for a good thing. It's even worse if a two-star general knows your name. Generally, it's not often for good things.
Right.
We're at a point where every general knows our name and my name, and it's for good reason.
But in a good way.
We've gotten huge support from the Army.
Yeah. Yes. So as successful as that is, it still obviously is not enough. We need more. So that really is kind of what is next, and one of the reasons why we're talking about this now. How can others get involved?
You're absolutely right. It's not quite enough. We're putting a Band-Aid on it. The Army will eventually, once it establishes this program, will double the amount of people registered each year. But everyone needs to be registered. The U.S. is at 6%. That translates to about a 50% chance on average across ethnicities of you being able to find a donor.
Yeah.
If you're Black, you have a 29% chance of finding a match.
Mm.
If you're Hispanic, it's about 35. Mm. The more people on the registry, the more chances all of us have of being able to survive any of these conditions. So they can go to, if they're on the civilian side, they can go to bethematch.org. They'll mail a kit to your house. You do the cheek swab, do a bit of paperwork, you mail it back. You forget you ever did it until you specifically are needed, because your genetic twin out there is having a tough time and you're the only one who can help.
Mm.
If you're on the DOD, you can go to salutetolife.org.
You know, it is appropriate that we talk about this now, given that November is Marrow Awareness Month, and because we are giving thanks for our good health and the health of our loved ones, it kind of behooves us to remember those who aren't as fortunate and who are depending on us, really, to take a step up. Again, Sergeant Christian Sutton is the founder of this movement, Operation Ring the Bell, within the U.S. Army. And again, this is a pretty amazing story of what you have been able to accomplish through your time in the service. Where do folks find out more about the opportunities to make a difference in ways that are important to them, that move them like this moved you in the Army?
Often the first thing to do if you want to make a difference in the Army is to join the Army. You can go to GoArmy.com or go to your nearest MEP station and talk to a recruiter. If you want to learn more about Operation Ring the Bell, you can Google Bone Marrow Guy, apparently, now, and I'll have like two Google pages now. Strange for me to fit into my personality, but also just volunteer, get involved with your community.
And that's the way these things always start. Sergeant Sutton, thanks very much for taking the time. We certainly appreciate it. Certainly continued success.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Your football forecast tonight, cloudy skies, but no rain. Actually pretty nice for mid-November, right about 52 degrees at kickoff, down around 50 by halftime, maybe into the upper 40s at the end of the game, but all in all, we'll take it. Before we turn our attention to basketball here in the next week and a half to 2 weeks, and to get through the third week, the high school football playoffs, and several area teams remain in contention. Bluffton takes on Ottawa Hills tonight. Columbus Grove and Mohawk will meet up. Patrick Henry and Hopewell Loudon will tangle. And Lipsick will face Delphus St. John's tonight at Ottawa Glandorf. Earlier this week on the Coach's Corner, John Marshall spoke with Vikings head coach Joe Kuykendall.
Last week, you jumped up and bit Gibsonburg, topping them 18-16 on their home field. You have to be really proud of your boys, especially as you were the 11th seed knocking off the number 3.
Oh, definitely. To go there and to play like we did, you know, and kind of hold our own in the first half and then kind of, you know, kind of really start to hit our groove in the second half offensively. And then get a stop at the end and run the ball to finish the game and do the things we needed to do to get a win. It was very rewarding.
Your opponents this week are the Blue Jays from Delphus St. John, and you'll both have a pretty short trip to Ottawa where you're going to play at Titan Stadium. St. John's is the 15th seed, the lowest seed remaining in any division in the tournament, but that and their record are rather deceiving as they play in the Midwest Athletic Conference, a group that often has more than one state champ per year. So they know what quality football looks like. Are you expecting this to be one of the better teams you've faced despite their computer seeding of number 15?
I would 100% agree. I think really other than Liberty Benton, this will be this is going to be the best football team that we played this year outside of LB. Delphus St. John's, with the size that they have up front, the size and the physicality they have at linebacker. They got four linebackers that are 200 plus pounds. Pandora would be a similar type of team to them, I guess, and if I had to look at it. So, you know, we definitely know that their record is misleading and that they've been battle-tested, and there's not much we can do that's going to catch them by surprise.
St. John's has split almost 50-50 between the pass and the rush. Is stopping one of those more important than the other, or is it just a matter of going out and trying to curb each play as it comes to you, no matter how they attack?
I think that's the biggest thing. You know, we just have to be lined up and stay disciplined in our assignments defensively. You know, if you can control the line of scrimmage, you know, you take away the run game, and then you can disrupt the passing game with your pressure. You know, but they are going to spread you out more. They are going to stay balanced. You know, so unlike a Gibsonburg, who it was going to be, you know, stop the run and win the game. You know, this is one of those things where you have to stay disciplined. You have to be able to not let big plays turn into points. You have to, you know, let them make them drive the field and then find ways to get stops and win some downs and kind of that war of attrition type mentality that you have defensively.
You mentioned how they have those big linebackers. Is getting out there and getting the block in that second level, is that going to be the key to being on the better side of the equation this week?
I think it will be. We need to be able to put those linebackers in some stressful situations. You know, we need to be able to make them play in space, you know, make them run and try to cover us, you know, try to get them, you know, so we're getting up to them in that second level and keep them from attacking downhill. I mean, they have a young man who blitzes a lot, and he's really good at it, and that pressure creates some confusion, and they haven't given up a lot of big plays. It's going to be tough to march the field. We're going to have to try to make sure we stay on the field in third down to do that, but we're going to have to get some chunk plays. We're going to have to get some bigger plays to try to gain some momentum in those ways and try to just put some pressure on, you know, their second-level guys because they are so good.
Lipsick Vikings head coach Joe Kuykendall with John Marshall on the Coach's Corner from earlier this week. That matchup between Lipsick and Delphus St. John's from Ottawa Glandorf, you can hear it tonight on our sister station, 100.5 WKXA, beginning at 6:40, also streamed live online at WKXA.com. You can follow all of the regional semifinal action from around the area on the WFIN scoreboard page, powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College. Go to WFIN.com/scoreboard. We also have it linked up at goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Okay, among the odd and unusual side of the headlines this morning, story out of Las Vegas, incidentally, a 700-pound a 700-pound stuffed dog that was reportedly stolen from a Vegas nonprofit agency has been found in front of an AutoZone location across town. The massive stuffed dog again, weighing 700 pounds, named Mr. Deeds, by the way, is a symbol of the Good Deed Project and the subject of many selfies. People apparently, you know, visit the pup, take the pictures with the stuffed dog. Unfortunately, a group of burglars recently pushed Mr. Deeds onto a trailer and drove off. There is there was video, I guess, of Mr. Deeds getting stolen. The executive director of the Good Deed Project, Mandy Tilaria, said, "I was in disbelief. How are you going to steal a 700-pound, 10-foot doll dog?" That would be a logical question. How are you going to steal a 700-pound, 10-foot dog? While the dog turned up at the AutoZone, the suspect or suspects still at large, the agency is just happy to have Mr. Deeds back. Ms. Tilaria admitted, "I was hoping we would find the dog, but honestly, I wasn't sure that we were going to." So, good news that Mr. Deeds is back where he belongs. Of all the things to steal, a 700-pound, 10-foot stuffed dog. Only in Vegas. Only in Vegas would something like this happen. I mean, what would you do with it? Apparently, they just wanted to play a prank, I guess. Left it in front of the autos. Maybe after they realized you really can nothing to do with a 700. You can't hide it anywhere. You're not going to. If somebody comes over to your house and sees it there, they're going to know. I mean, how many of them can there be, you know? Elsewhere in the broken news. Now, this is kind of interesting. A 300-carat necklace from the 18th century, believed to contain diamonds linked to the scandal surrounding Marie Antoinette, has been sold for close to $5 million at an auction in Geneva, Switzerland. The necklace, comprising nearly 500 diamonds arranged in three rows, is thought to have been created for royalty or a high-ranking aristocrat, based on its style, quality, and age. It was worn at two British coronations and is considered a remarkable example of Georgian-era luxury and historical significance. Sold for $5 million, this 300-carat necklace linked to Marie Antoinette. Now, that's important that it was linked to Marie Antoinette because the head of Royal and Noble Jewels at Sotheby's said in a statement, and I'm quoting here, "It stands head and shoulders above all other documented royal and imperial jewels of the period." Stands head and shoulders above this necklace. Marie Antoinette stands head and shoulders. If you know anything about the story of Marie Antoinette, you know that's a very interesting choice of words. Think about it. Moving on, several folks this past weekend had a beach party. They were having a beach party in Kodiak, Alaska. Now, I would think that mid-November, early to mid-November, is kind of late for a beach party in Kodiak, Alaska. And apparently, as you might expect, it was a little chilly. So the group of eight teenagers who were having this beach party decided to build a bonfire, build a little fire there on the beach. And apparently just a little fire was not enough to provide enough warmth. So Alaska state troopers say someone had the brilliant idea of throwing a 55-gallon fuel drum onto the fire. It did not end well. Five of the teenagers were injured and remain hospitalized after being medevaced to Anchorage for treatment. Maybe don't dump a 55-gallon fuel drum onto a open flame. The teenager whose brilliant idea it was to do that has been arrested. Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Here's hoping everybody is okay. Don't do that again. Let's see. A couple of other items from the broken news. Something interesting happening at the Miami International Airport recently. While traveling through the airport, a woman ended up with an undeclared item that she hadn't counted on. She was pregnant, and suddenly her water broke, and she went into labor near the security checkpoint area. Wow. That's a little extra excitement, added excitement there at the airport that Joe don't expect. Airport staff immediately called 911 to report a birth, a woman who had gone into labor. But before medics even got there, the 911 operator received an urgent update. One of the officers is heard saying, "It's a boy." The audio call being released to local news outlets. "It's a boy." Paramedics rushed the woman and child to a local hospital. Mom is believed to have been in between flights when her water broke. So far, there is no word on how mother and baby are doing, but they've got a story. Wonder if she has to pay extra for an added carry-on. Yeah. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this also from the International File, in Japan, they actually have a service for employees who want to quit their jobs but don't have the nerve to face their employers. You can hire a job-quitting proxy to resign, to quit for you. Mamuri is one such job-quitting service. The name is a play on the Japanese phrase mumuri, meaning I can't take this anymore. But here's the twist. What happens if the company you're planning to leave happens to be the company Mamuri? Apparently, that company, whose name means I can't take this anymore, found out what it's like to be on the receiving end of the equation when it was contacted by another job quitting agency who informed them that one of their employees was quitting. Turnabout is fair play, I guess. Mamuri took the ironic turn of events in stride. Posting on social media, "We have always maintained that no matter how great of efforts they make, there will always be instances in which certain companies and workers do not mesh." Mamuri also hopes to put this knowledge to good use when telling other companies its workers are quitting. You get a taste of your own medicine. You're a little bit more sensitive to the issue there. The job quitting service, one of their employees quit and hired a job quitting service to do it. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the hot and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Findlay's Andy Ritz on becoming a Findlay Rotarian.
After 35 years working as a pediatrician in Findlay, I wanted to give back to the community, but not at my job, but as a service that would reach many people. The best way to do this was for me to join Findlay Rotary, and that's what I did in February of 2022.
To become part of an organization that brings together business, professional leaders to provide community service and advance goodwill, contact Findlay Rotary at findlayrotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Guys, how many friends do you have? In a new survey of 2,000 American males, they find that on average, men have two best friends and five general friends. This is kind of interesting. 33% of those in the survey would be comfortable calling their friends bro. Hey, bro. 26% would call or consider their friends brothers. But only 6% would use the term bestie. Yeah, don't do that. Guys, don't do that. Don't call your friends bestie. No, we men don't do that. Bestie, come on. This was interesting, though. Millennials and Gen Z men are most likely to open up to their friends, their best friends. 23% in those ages say they share more openly with friends than they do even with their partners, with their significant other. And Caitlin Watson of Talkspace, which is a mental health platform, said it is amazing to see that the majority of men are comfortable confiding their most intimate feelings to their friends, but there's still a lot of progress to be made when it comes to addressing loneliness. The survey goes on to ask what personality traits men would consider to be the most masculine. And it's very prototypical, I think. 54% said loyalty. 52% said honesty. 48% cited leadership. And 40% said competitiveness. And yes, competitiveness among males, even friendly competitiveness, very much a strong thing. And it's one of the things, I think, makes men bond. You know, we bond over that competitiveness, even if it's amongst ourselves. Only 12% of men would say vulnerability was a masculine trait. And that is really at the heart of the survey and what they're trying to get to in terms of getting more men to open up and be vulnerable with their friends to kind of combat this problem of loneliness that we have in this country. Just don't use the term bestie. No, don't do that. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio once again with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. Before we get to the recipes, though, want to mention an event going on tomorrow at Findlay High School. It is the Findlay Music Boosters Craft Bazaar.
Yes.
And this is going to be a terrific event and an awful lot of fun.
Yes. Around 90 vendors.
Yeah. There's going to be all kinds of vendors. One
and
of
music.
Them.
Music.
Right.
It'll entertainment. Be lots and of, yes. Right, lots of stuff going on.
All of the student performances from the music groups. It is the Music Boosters all putting this on. So that makes sense. There'll be visits with Santa and photo opportunities. It says here. Concessions, raffles, more holiday fun.
Yes.
And it's all to support the music programs at Findlay High School and the Findlay City Schools. Not just the high school, K through 12.
Yes.
So all of the music
everybody.
Programs.
Yeah, the whole group.
So big craft bazaar. And the reason we bring it up, one of the vendors will be my wife, Kyra. she'll be selling her homemade gourmet caramels. Which for those who have had them, they are just fabulous.
They are really good.
My goodness. They are
they're really
absolutely
good. I've had many compliments on them. And
they're really good, if we do say so ourselves.
Yes.
So we will be there with those caramels for sale for yourself, or we'll make good stocking stuffers, good gifts for, you know, the teacher, the mailman, whoever.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got all kinds of different sizes.
Yeah, so a lot of great stuff. Stop by and see us. It is tomorrow between 9 and 3 at Findlay High School for the Findlay Music Boosters Craft Bazaar. And make sure that you stop by and see my wife, Kyra, with her caramels at the Craft Bazaar. Homemade caramels.
Please come see us.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Let's see here. So we have some recipes here, a couple that are great for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
This I wouldn't necessarily call a Thanksgiving recipe, this first one, but
good. It's really good.
It's really good.
If you wanted to make it a side and you're not a big turkey person, then this might be it.
Why not?
Yeah.
And for any, you know, chilly fall or winter evening, this is great.
This will feed a lot of people and you can stretch it.
Yes. And if it doesn't get gone, this is another one of those that's just absolutely scrumptious,
really
reheated.
Good. Yes.
It is a garlic butter sausage bites with creamy Parmesan pasta.
Yes.
Garlic butter sausage bites with creamy Parmesan pasta.
Yes. So for the sausage bites, you take 1 pound of smoked sausage sliced into bite-sized pieces, 4 tablespoons of butter, 4 cloves of garlic minced, 1 teaspoon of Italian seasoning, and salt and pepper to taste. And then for the creamy Parmesan pasta, 8 ounce fettuccine or panini pasta. I used fettuccine, 1 cup of heavy cream, 1 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and salt and pepper to taste. So start by boiling your water. Bring a large pot of salt water to a rolling boil. Cook according to the package instructions until al dente. Usually 8 to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think mine, since I did the
fettuccine.
Fettuccine, thank you. Mm-hmm. Fettuccine noodles, it was about 12 minutes.
Okay.
So drain the pasta, reserve a cup of the pasta water to use later if needed. While your pasta is cooking, heat a large skillet over medium heat. I use my iron skillet. Add the butter, let it melt. Swirl the pan to coat it evenly. Once melted, toss in your garlic. Saute for about 1 minute. Strain frequently. Place the sliced smoked sausages in the skillet and cook for 5 to 7 minutes. Stir that occasionally until it's browned and heated through on both sides. As the sausage cooks, then sprinkle in your Italian seasoning, your salt and pepper, and then reduce the heat to low. Once it's cooled down a little bit, then pour in your heavy cream and stir that until everything's well combined. As the cream warms, add your grated Parmesan cheese, and this will make your sauce.
Gotcha.
And it was really easy, really good. Mm-hmm. And then if the sauce is too thick, you can always, if you add too much Parmesan cheese and it's too thick, then you can add some of your reserved pasta pasta water.
Right.
Then gently fold in your pasta and creamy sausage mixture, coat everything, and enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good.
It's really easy.
And like we said, leftovers are delicious too, because all of those flavors merge. It's really good.
It was really yummy.
Now this would be good for Thanksgiving. Yes. Cheesy mashed potato puffs. If you don't want just a glob of mashed potatoes.
Right. Or if you have a bunch of mashed potatoes left over and you could do that next day or whatever. So this is 2 cups of mashed potatoes left over or freshly made, 1 cup of shredded cheddar cheese, 1/4 cup of Parmesan cheese, 2 large eggs, 1/4 cup of milk, 2 green onions chopped, salt and pepper to taste, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, and 1/2 teaspoon of smoked paprika, which is optional, but it just gives it a really good taste. Mm-hmm. So preheat your oven to 400 degrees and lightly grease a muffin tin. In a large bowl, combine the mashed potatoes, cheddar cheese, Parmesan, eggs, milk, green onion, garlic powder, and smoked paprika, salt and pepper. Mix all that well until smooth and creamy. Spoon the potato mixtures into your prepared muffin tin, filling each cup about 3/4 full. Bake for 20 to 25 minutes until the top is golden brown and the puffs are set. Let cool slightly before removing them from the muffin tin. Serve warm and enjoy. Mm,
yeah, that is great. Really easy.
Yes.
The cheesy mashed potato puffs. Yeah. And lastly, have a quick recipe for spiced cranberry apple cider.
I always do like a spiced cider for Thanksgiving. Yeah. Yeah. It's just yum and warm.
And it makes the house smell great.
Yes, yes. And if you want to, you can spike it later on in the evening with the leftovers.
Depends
you
know. On how everything with the family goes. Yes, correct. See me later.
Yes, see me later and I'll let you know. Yes, so spiced cranberry apple cider is 2 quarts of apple cider, 1.5 quarts of cranberry juice, 3/4 cups of brown sugar, and 1/2 cup of mulling spices. Pour the apple cider and the cranberry juice into the crock pot. Add your brown sugar, stir that until the brown sugar has pretty much dissolved. Then what I do is I add my spices to a coffee filter. I gather up the filter and then use some, tie it with some white cooking string.
Okay.
Just cut and then.
So make kind of like a tea bag.
Yes. But with a coffee filter.
With a coffee filter.
Because you get a lot more of your mulled spices if you do that. You get a bunch more of them. And then just drop that into the crock pot and let it go for 1 to 2 hours and stir occasionally and enjoy.
That's all there is to it.
That's all there is to it. It's really
the
good.
The recipes for the garlic butter sausage bites with creamy Parmesan pasta, the cheesy mashed potato puffs, and the spiced cranberry apple cider are posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page.
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. It's also linked up at goodmornings.net. Also, I have the information posted there about the Findlay Music Boosters Craft Bazaar. Don't forget about that. It is tomorrow, Findlay High School from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And we will be there. Yes. My wife Kyra will be there selling her homemade gourmet
caramels. You'll be there helping me.
I will be there helping her. So stop by and check them out. We'll have free samples.
Yes.
By the way,
we will have
free
samples.
So you can taste for yourself and see what all of the excitement is about. Pick up your gifts or maybe just caramels for yourself and for your family to set out for Thanksgiving and Christmas. Good stuff. We'll see you tomorrow.
Or we'll take orders too.
Yeah. And we'll see you tomorrow at Findlay High School. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, a new report says $76 billion worth of packages could be vulnerable to porch piracy this holiday season. We'll tell you how to make sure your gifts don't disappear before they even get a chance to go underneath the tree. Plus, Findlay Police Chief James Mathias will join us. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.